You're listening to The Sound Off. The Sound Off. With the Solomonster. Solomonster.
Book! 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 I'm Jeff the Booker T! Booker T!
Take the money! Get your new action figure! Dye your hair! And right off into the sunset. And Kev's a smart guy. That's exactly what he did.
Yep, Eric Bischoff actually said that on Impact this past Thursday night. He said Kevin Nash made the right move going back to WWE. He went there for the money. So I guess if you want to make money, the inference is that you go to WWE. And if you don't want to make money, you go to TNA. Way to go, guys. Although Impact did do its second highest rating ever on Spike TV this past Thursday night. So maybe I don't know what I'm talking about, but... yeah, he actually said that, actually went on TNA television and said that. I am still shocked by that, quite frankly, but I guess I really shouldn't be. This is episode 145 of Sound Off, which does its highest ratings ever every single week here on SEScoops.com. It is Saturday, February 5th, 2011. I am the Solomonster. Royal Rumble in the books. Of course, what Eric Bischoff is referring to is the surprise cameo appearance by one Kevin Nash as Big Daddy Cool Diesel in the Royal Rumble this past Sunday. Diesel, mind you, the Diesel character has not made an appearance on WWE television since 1996. Of course, this was Kevin Nash's first appearance in the company since 2003, possibly 2004. I'm pretty sure he left in 03. So it's been a while since Big Kev has been on TV, and Booker T, of course, also a former member of TNA's Main Event Mafia faction, brought back to WWE. He's been in talks with them for quite a while. He, too, was in the Royal Rumble, got one of the biggest pops on the entire friggin' show. And as we saw from SmackDown this past Friday night, Booker T has settled in as the newest addition to the SmackDown broadcast team. He apparently has replaced Matt Stryker, who I guess is just going to go back to teaching classes somewhere. He'll join Josh Matthews and Michael Cole every week, and I think he has a book coming out soon, which is no coincidence, and, you know, he could wrestle from time to time. Booker looked fine in the Rumble on Sunday. Nash, on the other hand, well, maybe not so much. I, by the way, I did pop for both of their appearances in the Rumble. I popped bigger for Diesel than I did for Booker T, but again, it has more to do with the Diesel character, and you know, it's a nostalgia pop, plain, pure, and simple. I mean, I think if you keep Kevin Nash on TV wrestling every single week, it's going to get old probably by week two, maybe week three. Nash has signed a Legends contract, which is a little surprising. It's not exactly a big money contract, but he did sign a Legends deal with WWE. I assume this means he'll for sure be at the Hall of Fame on April 2nd to see, if not induct, his good friend Shawn Michaels into the Hall of Fame. I mean, is Nash going to get a WrestleMania match out of things? Well, stranger things have happened. He had a little stare down with the Big Show after he was eliminated on his way back to the dressing room. And, you know, he could thank his buddy Triple H. Triple H is the one who lobbied for him to get a spot in the Rumble, so good for him. The Rumble show overall was a mixed bag. I like the Rumble match. By no means was it the best Rumble match that I've ever seen, or even, you know, top three, but I enjoyed it. First ever 40-man Royal Rumble. I was a little worried maybe the intervals would be too short, it would be a little too crowded in the ring, but with the stuff with the Nexus, and they kept tossing people out, you know, to me, I'm not usually a fan of that stuff, because it kind of kills the whole purpose of the Royal Rumble when guys are coming in and they're immediately being tossed out, and I don't think I've seen the crowd as angry as I did when I saw Booker T get eliminated, and just the vitriol from the crowd. They were not happy to see Booker T, or Diesel for that matter, get dumped out. It's kind of funny, on Twitter, Shawn Michaels was watching the Royal Rumble, and he was almost live blogging on Twitter. And he made a comment that his buddy Kevin Nash was the first person to get a chant during the Rumble, of course, which is utter and complete bullshit. Since CM Punk, from the moment CM Punk walked out as number one in the Rumble, he was getting CM Punk chants from the crowd, so I guess HBK just kind of glossed over that fact. Just to follow up a little bit here on the Booker and the Kevin Nash stuff, tying it into TNA, of course, has been hyping this angle over the last several weeks for their February 3rd Impact this past week that they were coming. And if that sounds familiar to you, it should, because they've already done this before. They, of course, were Immortal when they debuted a couple of months ago, but apparently a different they were supposedly coming back on Thursday night. And they had hyped the return of Hulk Hogan to Impact, who's been off TV for a while, and of course, none of this happened. Hogan did not appear on Impact. In fact, they talked about the ongoing court case involving Dixie Carter and control over TNA, and the judge issued a continuance, which is just unbelievable that they would use that word. So I guess that case has been adjourned, and now they're hyping March 3rd as the next big Impact show, or the next big date. I don't know if March... Is March 3rd even a Thursday? Check here and see. March 3rd is, in fact, a Thursday. So I guess the idea is that they're going to hype a big Impact show every month. It's too bad they don't do the same thing for their, you know, pay-per-views. Make no mistake, they was supposed to be the Main Event Mafia. The plan was to bring back the Mafia with Kurt Angle and Scott Steiner, who is back in TNA. Kevin Nash, maybe Booker T. The thing about Booker T is he made it very clear months ago that he was not coming back to TNA, and there were no discussions going on between the two sides. But the plan, they did want to have Booker back in the group, which makes you scratch your head and wonder, if they were running this angle already, and they were promoting this angle, and this is what they had in mind, for them to have not have even reached out to Booker T, let alone inked him to a deal, and for them to have not already reached a contract agreement with Kevin Nash, who they were in talks with, and you know, I've heard the rumors that Nash made a verbal agreement with Dixie Carter, big deal. You know, verbal agreements in wrestling don't mean shit. And when you're promoting an angle like this, and this is your big angle. You're hyping everything around your February 3rd Impact, and you know, they are going to be here, and you don't have them signed to a contract. For fuck's sake, what is wrong with you? Why in God? I mean, this would be the equivalent of Vince McMahon promoting a big WrestleMania angle. You know, when Bret Hart came back last year, for example, and Lord knows Vince has been trying to bring Bret Hart back for years and years, and trying to have Bret wrestle a match with Vince himself. Well, it finally came to fruition last year, and of course it wasn't pretty, but it would be the equivalent of them bringing Bret Hart back and not bothering to sign him to a contract, and promoting WrestleMania as the big return of Bret Hart and Bret Hart versus Vince McMahon, and then at the last minute, Bret Hart signs with TNA, or Bret Hart says, you know what, you screwed me once, now I'm going to screw you, because they never bothered signing him to a contract. I mean, it's like, you don't promote things like that in advance and put together these elaborate storylines unless you have the parts already in place. I guess TNA still has not mastered that logic yet, so LOL TNA is what I say. They get exactly what they deserve. And as things turned out, I did see part of Impact on Thursday night. Aside from Eric Bischoff's stupid comments at the beginning of that show and that promo, I think things will work out better for TNA given what happened here. Because the backup plan, what they did was... Well, let's skip ahead a little bit here. As I understand it, the end result of this angle was going to be Fortune turning babyface and feuding with Immortal anyway. But that was supposed to be the end game. So in the meantime, you would have had the Main Event Mafia come back, and there would have been another at least month or two, maybe 3 months of warring back and forth, and eventually AJ Styles and the members of Fortune would have turned face. So instead what happened is they kind of cut the middle out, and they just went straight to the end, because they had no choice. So we saw AJ Styles, and we saw the other members of Fortune, Kazarian and Beer Money and whatnot, in the ring, united seemingly with Kurt Angle and Crimson and Mr. Kennedy, and they are now babyfaces. Fortune is now going to be feuding with Immortal. And again, Impact did the second highest rating it's ever done on Thursday night, which I don't know if it has to do with that angle. I don't know if it has to do with them hyping they. I don't know if it has to do with the Kurt Angle, Jeff Jarrett storyline with you know, Karen Jarrett and all that stuff. I don't know. I guess we'll find out if Impact settles in at this number or if it falls right back down to earth next week. But the point is, by focusing on your homegrown TNA guys like AJ Styles and focusing on the younger guys instead of bringing in Kevin fucking Nash and Booker T and Scott, and they did bring in Scott Steiner, but you know I can excuse that. You're going to get more for your money by building things around those younger guys. But it's just kind of ridiculous that it took this to happen for TNA to be forced into doing this. Their hand was forced because the old guys fucked them over. And there's a lesson in there somewhere. So hopefully TNA can learn from that. And I think they'll be better off, quite frankly, for doing it this way instead of doing it the original way. Now, one thing I wanted to mention, I in giving my Royal Rumble predictions on the show last week, I said that my pick was either John Cena or I had a feeling about number 21. Now, of course, Booker T entered the Royal Rumble at number 21, and that was a hell of a pick. So there was something special about number 21. I was onto something there, but it's not as though Booker T was going to win the Rumble, and in fact, he got tossed out of the ring about a minute in. And then who comes out as number 22? John fucking Cena. I could not believe, after picking Cena or number 21, that Cena came out at 22. I was so pissed off. But as it turned out, Cena did not win the Royal Rumble, and it was Alberto Del Rio getting the Royal Rumble victory. And I know some people predicted it. They were sure as hell hyping him up for weeks, and that now we know why they put him on Raw so much, because not everybody watches SmackDown, and since they were going to strap the rocket to this guy's back, they wanted everybody, Raw and SmackDown fans alike, to know who he was. And surprisingly enough, they broke from tradition, and they actually put the younger guy over in the Royal Rumble match. And Del Rio will be getting the world title shot against Edge, or whoever the champion may be, at WrestleMania 27. Again, if you look back at the last couple of Rumbles, last year, Edge, who's hardly a young guy anymore by WWE standards, was a surprise entry in the Rumble, and he won it. Here's a guy that, even at that point, probably already had 9 world titles under his belt. Didn't need to win the Rumble, but he did. 2009, Randy Orton won. Again, Randy Orton was already a big star and a multiple-time champion at that point. 2008, which was the Rumble I was at, John Cena was a surprise entry, and he won the Rumble at Madison Square Garden. The year before that, The Undertaker, who doesn't have to win anything for the rest of his career, won the Royal Rumble. So typically, you can't say that they use the Rumble as a vehicle to put young guys over, but they did do that this year, and I liked it. I liked it, and I will say, you know, when he dumped out Randy Orton and won the Rumble, it seemed, I don't know, I was happy with the result, but it seemed a little anticlimactic, and then I saw Santino, and the crowd started building, and they started going nuts, and I thought, for a split second, they had me. They had me for a split second. Not that I would have actually expected Santino to make it to WrestleMania and get a title shot, but I thought for a split second they were actually going to have Santino dump Del Rio and win the Rumble. And I'm very grateful they didn't do it, but I really, really liked that twist at the end. It was just, it planted the seeds of doubt briefly in your mind. And the fans were going crazy. The fans in that building wanted Santino to win that fucking Rumble match. But of course, he ended up getting tossed out. Del Rio won. Ricardo Rodriguez went nuts, lost his voice. It was great stuff. And it's good to see somebody new get put over. You know, Del Rio did an interview in studio with Peter Rosenberg of the Hot 97 station here in New York. And the video of that interview is up on YouTube, so you can find it on there. It's about a 10-minute long interview with Alberto out of character. And they talk about him winning the Rumble and how important it is. He's the first ever full-blooded Mexican to win the Rumble. Mysterio, of course, is I think he was born in America. And they talk about Dos Caras Jr., which is the character he played for over a decade in Mexico, and how he was always a babyface, how easy or hard it was for him to transition from being a babyface his whole career to being a heel, losing his mask in FCW. All of these different things. The one guy in WWE that he would love to face more than any other. It's a really great interview, and he's very soft-spoken, very well-spoken. I think he'll be a good representative for this company going forward. Wouldn't shock me at all to see them put the title on him at WrestleMania, especially because you know that his match is not going on last. And so if they don't want to end the show on a sour note and put the heel over for the championship, then they don't have to worry about that, because you know, they could put that match on in the middle if they want to. I have no doubt that they're going to end that show with Cena versus Miz anyway, so what difference does it make? So, big thumbs up on Del Rio winning the Royal Rumble. It caught me a little bit off guard. It broke from tradition a little bit, but I think it was for the better. They know they have to put these younger guys over. And Del Rio, you know, what can I say? They've struck gold with this guy. He's got a great persona. He's getting better in the ring. The facials are fantastic. One of the few times WWE has made a decision like forcing somebody to take their mask off, and it actually paid off for them in dividends. And just a couple of other Rumble notes here. Great Khali, as I predicted, did in fact make a return in the Rumble. Didn't really have much of an impact. I think he threw out one or two members of the new Nexus, and that was about it. Daniel Bryan. I was really happy to see Daniel Bryan and CM Punk draw 1 and 2, and I think the two of them were very happy as well. Remember, before Punk got hurt and was out for a little bit and was doing the announcing, the plan was that he was going to have a program with Daniel Bryan for the U.S. title. Now, as things turned out, I think Punk is in a much better position and much higher up on the card now than he would have been. But it was good to see these two guys lock up for the first time in a WWE ring. And Daniel Bryan, you know, I said earlier the crowd was really pissed off when Booker and Diesel got thrown out, but they were also pretty upset when Daniel Bryan went out, and he was in there for over 20 minutes. So a really good showing for him in the Rumble match. John Morrison, of course, had one of the all-time great Rumble spots. I know there were people, you know, people posted clips of this on YouTube, and I saw a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon of, oh, this was a fake stunt. If you really watch really, really closely when he gets knocked off the ring apron and he you know, hits the barricade, there's like footholds in the barricade where his feet are supposed to go. And I've watched the video over and over again, and it's bullshit. But you know what? Even if there were footholds in that barricade hidden from our view, it's still pretty impressive that he would have landed in exactly the right spot. And then, of course, trying to balance himself on that barricade is not an easy thing to do. The vertical leap from the barricade to the ring steps, just really impressive shit. And yeah, I mean, that was, I don't know what else to say. That was certainly the highlight of the night right there. That'll be one for the Rumble highlight reel. And it's one of those things I have always wondered if they were ever going to do a spot like that. Not exactly like that, where somebody would, you know, hit the barricade and hold on and then kind of walk across it. But I've always wondered if they were ever going to do a spot. And the only time I've ever seen this was in a Battle Royal once. It was a Battle Royal on a WWF Superstar show in the mid-90s. And they did a spot where Jerry Lawler was thrown out of the ring. And if I remember correctly, he was thrown out of the ring, hit the floor, but both feet did not hit. And so basically he got up and he was hopping around on one leg. And Bret Hart, who he was feuding with at the time, came out and snuck up from behind Lawler, punched him in the face, and then Lawler fell down and was officially eliminated. So that's the only time I've ever seen something like that. And it was in a Battle Royal on Superstars. And I've always wondered if they were going to do a spot like that on the Rumble, where somebody would be thrown out, but only one foot would hit and they would hop around and kind of jump back in. So this was not exactly that, but this was kind of like that, I suppose. I was not a big fan of the Hornswoggle bullshit in the middle. I was just waiting for somebody to just toss this midget into the crowd. I was waiting for Gene Snitsky to come out and give the midget a boot into the crowd, kind of like he did with Lita's baby, if you recall, on Raw many years ago. Thankfully, Sheamus came out and booted the midget off the top, and that was the end of him. Kane came in at number 40 in the Rumble and did not eliminate a single person. In fact, Kane, I think, was gone within a minute and a half. That was actually pretty disappointing for a guy that's had such dominance in the Rumble matches in the past. One of my all-time favorite moments from this year's Rumble, besides John Morrison's spot and the midget getting booted, was John Cena and Randy Orton, believe it or not, but it's not what you think. There was a point in the Rumble match where Cena and Orton were the only two guys standing, and they basically were having a face-off, a stare-down, and they have this spot some years in the Rumble. So, for example, Hogan and Warrior had their infamous stare-down in the Rumble match back in 1990. Place went apeshit for it. It led to a big match at WrestleMania that year. You've had Austin and The Rock in the past have had a stare down in the Rumble match. And there have been other examples of it as well. Triple H and John Cena a couple years ago at the MSG Rumble. This crowd, when Cena and Orton went eyeball to eyeball across the ring, staring down one another, pointing up to the WrestleMania 27 sign, this crowd did not give a shit about seeing John Cena and Randy Orton face off. I mean, I couldn't give a shit either, but I could not believe how quiet that crowd was. You could hear a pin drop. And I loved every second of it, because we are sick to death of John Cena versus Randy Orton. I don't ever need to see this match again. And the problem is, Cena and Orton are two, they are the two big top baby faces in your company right now. There are no bigger baby faces than John Cena and Randy Orton in WWE, or at least baby faces that get the kind of push that those two guys do. They are so protected. They are your two top stars. And if they had not given this match away, and even on Raw, I'm not even talking about pay-per-view matches, of which they've had no less than 15 of them in the last 3 years. But even on Raw, I mean, think back to the old school Raw. The old school Raw in November was my favorite Raw of the year. There was a John Cena, Randy Orton pull-apart brawl on that show. There was a Raw show a little before that, I think, where wasn't there like a tables match or something on Raw for free? And there was this weird convoluted spot at the end where I think Cena went to give Orton the attitude adjustment, but he turned it into an RKO through the table that nobody really could tell was an RKO. I mean, we've seen these guys so many times before. It was a message. It was a message that this crowd in Boston sent to the people backstage, and I hope they heard that message loud and clear. We don't need to see these two guys ever again, let alone at WrestleMania. And I loved it. I have never been more happy for a spot in a match to not get a reaction than I was at the Rumble. Triple H, I was shocked. I said that if Triple H wasn't in the Rumble, I would be shocked, and I was very surprised to not see Triple H in the Rumble, especially because he's going to be back before WrestleMania. And he'll likely face Sheamus, but whoever he faces, he will be back in time for WrestleMania. We've already seen the first trailer for his movie, The Chaperone, which looks terrible. And, you know, he's on the booking sheets for some of the house shows, that MSG house show, for example, in March. So he's on his way back, and it just seemed to me the Rumble would have been the best place for it. Again, unless he was giving his buddy Kevin Nash, you know, a pass by letting him go out there and get the biggest pop of the night. I was just stunned. I expected him to be in there, and I guess maybe it'll be more surprising if they just have him come out on TV as a surprise one of these weeks, or, you know, maybe they'll start running vignettes for him. I don't know. But very surprised by that. Dolph Ziggler, I thought, looked really good in his match with Edge. The match started slow, but it really built. It was the best match of the night, I thought, maybe aside from the Rumble itself. It was a long match, too. I mean, when you only have three singles matches on the show besides the Rumble, you're going to have to let them go for a little while. And I think the Ziggler match with Edge was over 20 minutes. And it really, really picked up in those last 5 minutes or so. Just a really good match. Dolph looked good. And I think he proved that if they have enough faith to put him in that position again in the future, and I don't know if they will or not, but he can hang. You know, he can hang. He will not crumble in a heap like some guys tend to do sometimes when they're put in that position for the first time. So, thumbs up on that. Good match. I'm fine with the finish. I didn't expect Ziggler to win. I just wanted him to look good, and I thought he did. So now we have our WrestleMania matches set, assuming that things don't get fucked up between now and then, because we do have the Elimination Chamber, and I know the two Chamber matches are already set. But your Mania main events look like this. John Cena is likely going to challenge The Miz for the championship. I guess we'll see, pending the outcome of that Chamber match. And we have Alberto Del Rio facing Edge, or whoever the world champion may be, for that title. You know, Christian, for the people who thought Christian was coming back at the Rumble, Christian is still not 100%. And I think there's even some question about whether or not he'll be able to make it back in time for WrestleMania. But if he can, I would not be opposed to putting him in that Edge-Del Rio match and making it a three-way. Now, I am not a fan of multiple-man matches, especially in WrestleMania main events, but this is not going to be the main event of WrestleMania. Like I said, Cena-Miz will be. And if you remember, it was Alberto Del Rio in storyline who put Christian out of action. He was the one who injured Christian, and when Christian actually appeared at the Slammy Awards in a sling, I believe he actually made a comment about getting revenge on Del Rio. And if this is a way to get Christian into a match involving Edge at WrestleMania, and you already have the built-in backstory where Christian was put out of action by Alberto Del Rio, I don't know how Christian manages to, you know, finagle his way into a title match at WrestleMania, but if they could figure out a way to do it, I would not mind making that match a triple threat match. I mean, that's just me. Assuming Christian can make it back. Plus, if Christian can wrestle, but he's not 100%, you're in a match with two other guys. So it takes a little bit of the pressure off. So I'm just putting it out there. I would love to see them do that. And it would certainly make sense, storyline-wise. So that brings us to Raw from Monday night. Everybody! Oh yes, I could not help but think of that song when Raw went off the air on Monday night. Has there ever been a time in WWE history where it was so easy to get a championship match, where it was so simple to get a title shot, than it is in 2011? I mean, think about this for a second. You have people, let's take John Cena, for example. John Cena is in the Royal Rumble match. John Cena, by the way, is already a 9-time, 10-time world champion, something like that. He's had numerous title opportunities. And he's in the Royal Rumble, and he gets eliminated. Albeit unfairly, he got dumped out by The Miz, but still, John Cena lost. He did not win the Royal Rumble, which means he does not get to go to WrestleMania and fight and face the champion, in theory. Now, all of a sudden, you've got the Elimination Chamber, and John Cena is one of, what, 6 superstars in the chamber match. So all of a sudden, John Cena is getting yet another opportunity to potentially go to WrestleMania, which I'm sure he will, and challenge The Miz for the championship. So it really doesn't matter at the end of the day. Add to that, we just saw a 40-man Royal Rumble on Sunday night, and the very next night we get another Royal Rumble match, albeit with 7 superstars, who, again, have an opportunity in this Raw Rumble on Monday to face the champion for the title at the next pay-per-view, even before WrestleMania. A match that, again, John Cena had an opportunity to win, but he got eliminated. But who cares, because John Cena is going to have another fucking opportunity at the next pay-per-view. I just cannot remember a time in history where it was so easy to either be champion or to get a title shot. It's just shot after shot after shot, and it made me think of that song, so I just had to play that. Now, all that being said, and I can complain about that all day long, but I will say that the Raw Rumble was a fine match, and I actually was very happy with the result. Jerry the King Lawler was in the match, and he won. And I thought he was going to win, but then, you know, there was one point where he had his back turned, and I think Sheamus was coming over, and I said, oh, that's it, he's out. But once John Cena got knocked out, there was no way Sheamus was going to win, so I knew Lawler was going over, and I'm actually fine with that. Lawler, at the age of 61, and I just complained a little bit earlier on in this podcast about, you know, TNA placing the emphasis on the younger guys because they have no choice. The old guys they were going to use left and bailed on them. There's a big difference between Kevin Nash, who is, what, in his early 50s, right? And Jerry Lawler, who's probably 10 years older than Nash, but looks so much better in the ring and performs so much better and is so much quicker. It's amazing. Again, Nash is 7 feet tall. He's got bad knees. He's had like 30 knee operations. And Lawler is not a tall guy. And he's been very fortunate to have suffered very few serious injuries in his career. I think the most serious injury he's ever suffered was a broken leg, which was probably about 25 or 30 years ago. It's kind of like Ric Flair. These guys are made of rubber. Ric Flair, by the way, apparently tore his rotator cuff in a match with Doug Williams in Europe on the TNA tour. And he may need surgery on that, which is kind of funny because Ric Flair is typically a guy that you don't hear about getting injured. And he probably shouldn't be wrestling anymore. And he is, and he goes and apparently tears his rotator cuff, so that sucks. And I know Jerry Lawler, by the way, wrestles on the independents. He just had at least one match, actually, on an indie show with Bill Dundee, who is one of his all-time big rivals. And Lawler's been doing independents every single week for a while now, but I just pray that he doesn't get hurt between now and then. I mean, how shitty would that be if Lawler is supposed to go to the next pay-per-view and main event that pay-per-view facing Miz for the championship and he gets hurt on an indie show or something? That would supremely suck. But yeah, the King is going to get a title shot against the Miz at the Elimination Chamber show next month, or I should say later this month. And you know what? If it's anything like their first match, which was a TLC match, granted, but if it's anything like that first match, I would wager a bet that this may be better than some other WWE pay-per-view main events that you're liable to see all year long. You know, and I have no problem with this because, again, Lawler is such a great performer, and the fans are into him. And this pay-per-view essentially is just a buffer anyway between the Rumble and WrestleMania. Lawler is not winning the title, so don't think for a second that he is. But he can do a lot to help get Miz over. Now, I could rant about how the Miz has not beaten anybody of any note since he became champion. He beat Randy Orton on that first night because Orton was hurt and he already wrestled the match. And since then, he's beaten Orton, what, twice? And they're all fluky wins. He needed help, or they were accidental victories, or somebody like CM Punk at the Rumble interfered in the match and cost Orton the match. He had that one win against John Morrison on Raw, and that is it. You know, even the matches with Lawler, he needed help. The Miz has been booked as a castrated champion. He has no balls. And perhaps, you know, he'll get a very strong, clean win over Lawler at the pay-per-view. But even if he does, he hasn't beaten anybody of note fair and square. He should have went over Randy Orton at the Rumble fairly and cleanly on his own. You know, even if he hooked the tights. I'm not saying hooking the tights is not a clean victory per se, but what I mean is Miz needs a victory over somebody like an Orton or a Cena. Or maybe not Cena because they're going to fight at WrestleMania, but he needs a victory over somebody without help from Alex Riley, without somebody accidentally going through a table, or without somebody else interfering and laying them out, and he hasn't had that. And I think that's why some people are still not able to fully get behind Miz, like myself. As much as I love the guy, he has not been booked very strong as champion. And, you know, if they're going to go at Lawler again, fine. I think it'll be a fine match. It's just fresh. Which is kind of funny I use the word fresh with 61-year-old Jerry the King Lawler, but it's fresh that somebody different is going to be in the championship match on pay-per-view instead of John Cena or Randy Orton or Triple H or Batista or The Undertaker or any of the same names that we've been accustomed to in the last 3, 4, 5 years. I can guarantee you Jerry Lawler has never once been in a pay-per-view main event in WWE in the last 5 years. And I have no problem with that at all. I'm actually looking forward to it. I'm not sure if I'm going to buy the pay-per-view or not, but I'm looking forward to that match taking place at the Chamber show. A couple of other Raw notes here. Husky Harris. Oh, boy. Husky Harris. I like Husky. And that being said, he has gotten even larger in recent weeks to the point where even I am kind of sitting here watching on TV saying, "Guy, yeah, this guy's got to lose a little bit of weight." Now, you don't want him to lose too much weight because then Husky Harris just becomes Harris if he's not Husky anymore. But apparently, and this is, I don't know this for a fact, but apparently he'll be off TV for, well, indefinitely, I think, to address his weight. I mean, of all the people to lose to Santino's Cobra, you know, Husky has been booked. What does Michael Cole call him? An army tank with a Ferrari engine? He looked pretty strong in the Rumble match defending CM Punk before he got tossed out. But yet they have him, not even McGilligutty, they have Husky Harris lose cleanly to the fucking Cobra in a tag match on Raw against Santino and Kozlov. And if that isn't bad enough, after the match they have Orton punt him in the skull, which, by the way, the last time we saw Orton punt somebody in the skull, it was Chris Jericho, and he's still not back on TV. So I think that was the end for now of young Husky Harris, and I'm sad to see that because he was one of the brighter bulbs, if you will, in the new Nexus. And you know, why you couldn't do that, let's say, to somebody like David Otunga, I don't know. But I was just, when I saw, forget the punt, when I saw him lose to the Cobra, I knew that something was going on. We see Edge and Miz again, champion against champion, for the second week in a row. And for the second goddamn week in a row, they put this match on in the middle of the fucking show. I mean, if that right there doesn't tell you how a champion versus champion match means shit in 2011, and even the titles, how little they mean compared to a couple of years ago, I don't have a better example for you than that. I mean, that's just ridiculous. And I think those are the only real things of note that happened. Oh, that's right. There was one other little tiny itsy-bitsy thing that happened on Raw Monday night. This weird video, which I missed the first time because I was flipping during one of the commercials. And when you do that, you run the risk of missing whatever they show when they come back from commercial. But they showed it again, and I saw it. And basically, they ran this vignette, which they did air on SmackDown Friday night as well. So I just wanted to put that out there. So they air this vignette, which is very brief. It's maybe 45 seconds long. And all you see is this mysterious figure who apparently is wearing a long black trench coat and black cowboy boots walking through the woods towards what appears to be an abandoned log cabin. And this person walks up the steps, seemingly going into the cabin. They fade to black, and the date 2/21/11 comes on the screen and then evaporates into smoke. And this has set the internet off in a flutter all week long. People have been speculating about what it all means, who it's referring to. Obviously, it's referring to somebody or some group of people who are coming in to WWE. February 21st, of course, Raw will be live at the Save Mart Center, I believe, in Fresno, California, out on the West Coast. So, with all the speculation that's been going on, people have taken it upon themselves, in most cases, to assume that this means that the one and only Sting is coming into WWE. Steve Borden, who has never once signed a deal with WWE, he is the one WCW star that never worked for Vince McMahon, and they have taken it upon themselves to not only speculate, but to flat out say that Sting is coming in. There was a minor little tiny item in the New York Daily News earlier in the week from some dude that calls himself King Jordan that said Sting has signed a one-year deal with the WWE. Reportedly, Sting has signed a one-year deal with the WWE. Sting has not signed a one-year deal with WWE. So I don't know where King Jordan gets his news from. But what I can tell you is this, since everybody's been asking about Sting. And Sting and WWE, last I heard, which was this morning, have not talked to one another at all. There have been absolutely no discussions between Sting and WWE at all. Now, Sting, as far as everybody knows, is a free agent. He did not re-sign with TNA, which he has done every year. He signs these little one-year deals and says that this is going to be his last year in wrestling, and he said that the last 5 years. And he always re-signs for 1 year with TNA. Well, apparently he has not re-signed with TNA. He still could, but to this point he is not. So he is available. He is still not 100%. He suffered a pretty serious shoulder injury at some point last year, did not have surgery, and so he was basically wrestling with a bum shoulder. And Sting did not look all that great in the ring last year, and if he didn't, that would probably be the reason why. So I'm not sure he's at 100% yet. But he is available. But there is absolutely no reason to believe that he and WWE have any sort of deal in place, because there have been no discussions, unless they're keeping it so secret that even top people in the company are not aware of it. There have been no discussions. Now, with 2 weeks or 2.5 weeks left to go between now and February 21st, it's certainly not out of the realm of possibility that Sting and WWE could reach some sort of agreement. It's going to have to be WWE that reaches out to him, and if they propose some sort of short-term deal, maybe even just one appearance at WrestleMania, throw a bunch of money at him, maybe put him in the Hall of Fame, give him a DVD treatment, action figure, the whole kit and caboodle. If I'm Sting, why would I turn that down? That seems like a pretty sweet deal. And WWE is in a position right now where, looking at the proposed WrestleMania card, if, for example, The Undertaker is even able to wrestle at WrestleMania, which is questionable at this point, you know, an Undertaker-Wade Barrett match, for example, which is the proposed match for Undertaker, if he can make it back to WrestleMania in time and actually compete in a singles match. You know, again, Undertaker was backstage at a SmackDown taping not too long ago, a couple weeks ago, in fact, scouting, essentially, the members of the Core. That was the same night that the Core made their debut, and he was watching very intently when that angle unfolded. You know, when Undertaker, we last saw him on television, he was being buried alive at the hands of Wade Barrett and the Nexus at that particular time. So they have a backstory here, although we still don't know exactly why the Nexus helped bury the Undertaker. I assume there's some sort of payoff to that. That's the plan right now. You know, there was talk about maybe Ezekiel Jackson or even Kane. If Undertaker is unable to do a singles match with Wade Barrett, perhaps Undertaker would team with Kane. This is what I've heard. It doesn't make any fucking sense. But perhaps The Undertaker, if he has to do a tag match, can team up with Kane. That's right. Team up with his brother that he feuded with last year for how many months, I don't remember. And that Undertaker and Kane as a team would face off with the Core in some sort of handicap match at WrestleMania. None of those scenarios sound very appealing to me. I would almost rather Undertaker not even bother competing at WrestleMania. But the fact is, you look up and down this card, Cena vs. Miz, Del Rio and Edge, good matches, I'm sure, but nothing screams WrestleMania to me. And I feel like you always have to have at least that one special attraction. It doesn't have to be a celebrity, but it could be. And if it's not a celebrity, some sort of match similar to Rock vs. Hogan. And you're never going to have a match that's as big as Rock vs. Hogan, but it was a special attraction. The match itself, as a match, if you recall, wasn't even all that great. The crowd helped make that match, but it felt special. It felt special, and there's nothing about this proposed WrestleMania card this year that feels special. Randy Orton versus CM Punk does not feel special. You know, again, Cena versus Miz, I'm sure it'll be a good match. It does not feel special. Undertaker against Sting, which is what everybody is assuming is the plan, and it's not, but Undertaker versus Sting, that would be special. Now, you've got two guys with bum shoulders who are over 50 years, well, in Sting's case, he'll be 52 years old when WrestleMania rolls around. Undertaker's about 47, 48. I don't know what kind of actual match you're going to get out of these guys. You're certainly not going to get Undertaker versus Shawn Michaels, but it doesn't matter, because if these guys can go in there and have a serviceable match, people would be fine with that. I think the build-up to a match like that, the build-up between Undertaker and Sting and the promos for it and the fact that Sting is competing in his first and perhaps only ever WrestleMania, that's what's going to help make that match. And I do think that match would help sell more buys for the pay-per-view. I mean, you're not talking about the difference between, you know, 300,000 domestic buys and 600,000, but it would mean something. I mean, there are already people writing online, oh, I'm not ordering WrestleMania this year unless Sting vs. Undertaker happens. And I just kind of laugh at that, because when at what point did WWE promise you that Sting was going to be coming in? I do see the similarities between the promo that ran on Monday and a Sting promo from before Starrcade 1997. I have seen the videos. They are very similar. You know, who's to say that people in creative and in WWE production didn't borrow the idea from that video? But the video, I can tell you, was not done with the intention of Sting being the payoff. The video was done for The Undertaker. The Undertaker, in fact, there was a bit of a spoiler that got posted on the Save Mart Center website for the arena that basically, and it might still say this, it says, The Return of The Undertaker. Now, if I were booking, if I were Vince McMahon, and I see the unbelievable reaction, the uproar that this video, this little tiny vignette, has created, almost this viral type reaction, I put my money where my mouth is. And if I'm looking for a special attraction at WrestleMania, which clearly they are, and whatever they had planned for Brock Lesnar was never going to happen, and that fell through, then you have Sting, who, even with a bum shoulder at 51 years of age, soon to be 52, clearly not in his prime anymore, but still, you know what, looks pretty good for a guy his age. People love the Sting character, and there's a certain mystique to it in that this is the one guy that Vince McMahon was never able to get. They came close one or two times. You know, former WWE writer Dave Lagana regaled us with a story this past week of how Sting almost was signed to face Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 18 in Toronto. I had heard prior to that, the story was that they came very close with Sting on a deal the following year for a WrestleMania 19 appearance that would have seen him perhaps descend from the ceiling, which I don't know about that. They haven't done that since Owen Hart died. But the point is, I had heard that Sting was almost signed to a deal to come in at WrestleMania 19, either during or immediately after the Rock vs. Austin match, and perhaps it would have led to a Rock-Sting match on the next pay-per-view. But regardless, none of those things ever happened. And Sting was one of those guys right up there with the likes of Ric Flair, who, you know, was looked at as the franchise, the icon in WCW, and Flair has been in and out of WWE, but never Sting. So there's a certain appeal there. You know what I mean? There really is. And if I were booking, I pick up the phone, I call Sting, who I've talked to before. If I'm Vince McMahon, it's not like they've never spoken to one another before, and I say, hey, listen, I've got a proposal for you. What's your schedule look like the next 2 months? How would you feel about this? And if that video is for The Undertaker, then fine. I mean, if you're going to build to an Undertaker-Sting match, you've got to bring Undertaker back, too. He's been off TV for a couple of months. So I have no problem if Undertaker is the mysterious man walking into the log cabin, why he would be doing that, I don't know. I don't remember them ever doing vignettes quite like this for any of his other 1,000 returns from injuries, but nonetheless, Undertaker could come back on February 21st. That does not mean Sting could also not make an appearance on that same show, and in fact, I wouldn't even necessarily do it at the beginning of the show. I wouldn't have Sting come out and cut some big, long promo. Some of Sting's best work was when he kept his mouth shut. And he didn't say a single word in practically all of the build-up, which lasted for over a year, to his first match at that Starrcade pay-per-view with Hulk Hogan. Well, it was technically their second match, but first match with the Crow Sting character. Sting doesn't have to say a word. You have Undertaker make his big comeback at the end of the show. He's the payoff. He's the guy from the video. And Undertaker comes out, gets a big pop at the end of the show. He's standing in the middle of the ring. He starts cutting a promo. He cuts this promo. And then, you know, when everybody pretty much at that point has figured, all right, well, I guess Undertaker is the big payoff here. All of a sudden, you know, the lights start to flicker. Right? Isn't that the Undertaker shtick? The lights start to flicker. You hear the lightning in the background. Well, guess what? They've done that for Sting in the past as well in WCW. So people still, they're seeing the flickering lights. They're hearing the bolts of lightning. Nobody thinks anything of it because that's the Undertaker shtick. But then all of a sudden, there's a spotlight that shows on the WrestleMania 27 sign that everybody points to. That just annoys the fuck out of me. But you know what? You've got that big WrestleMania 27 sign. You shine a spotlight on it, and guess what? Guess who's standing up in the rafters right on top of the WrestleMania sign, pointing down at the Undertaker with a black baseball bat? Sting. Now, you can't tell me the sight of that and the reaction that that would elicit from the audience would not give you goosebumps. And I just thought of that today. I was thinking, well, if Sting was going to be on that February 21st show, how would I book his return? That's all I would do. It would happen in the last 2 minutes of the show. And that one scene, as you go off the air, would have people in such a buzz. You would create such a buzz just by that one scene alone. That right there will sell you WrestleMania pay-per-views. Now, if you want to have Sting the following week come out and cut a long promo explaining why he's here and he wants to end the streak and you know, it's icon versus icon at WrestleMania, that's fine. But like I said, I don't even know that I would have Sting speak. I would keep it a mystery at least for a couple of weeks. What are his intentions? Why is he here? You know, he can come out and keep pointing at Undertaker with a ball bat. You know, he can speak without actually speaking, which sometimes, you know, less is more. I would love to book this angle. If I were in charge, I would love to book this storyline. And I just fear that people are getting way too ahead of themselves. You know, even though everybody's talking about Sting, I just talked about Sting. The fact is, the plan is not for it to be Sting. This would require something that WWE rarely, if ever, does. It would require them to break their plans and listen to the audience. And unfortunately, more often than not, that does not happen. Of course, it would also require Sting to be okay with coming in to essentially wrestle one match and job to The Undertaker, because there ain't no way Sting's going over Undertaker at WrestleMania. But Sting doesn't come off to me as the kind of guy that would really have a problem with that so much. He just would probably want to make sure he's getting paid well. And, you know, I think he would be receptive to the idea. I don't know the man personally, but I just can't help but think that, again, if you called him up and said, listen, we need you. We have this great idea for you, and you get to work with The Undertaker, one of the most respected veterans in the business, somebody he's never had the opportunity to work with before. He may not have even have ever said one word to The Undertaker in their careers. But we're going to bring you in for a WrestleMania match in Atlanta, your former home with WCW, Atlanta GA, at the Georgia Dome, and we'll pay you, you know, X number of dollars. It'll be a short-term commitment, not any sort of long-term deal. You're not going to go on the road to do house shows and all that stuff. You know, and on top of that, if they want to put him in the Hall of Fame this year, I think that would be a fantastic idea. But at the same time, if you're not going to have Sting talk, it kind of kills the vibe a little bit if all of a sudden he's out of character cutting a speech at the Hall of Fame. I kind of get that. But you know, the thing is, I think a double whammy of Shawn Michaels and Sting headlining the Hall of Fame this year would be phenomenal. And the thing is, it would almost be too perfect because you can't, in my opinion, you cannot have Sting as your highlight attraction at the Hall of Fame. Shawn Michaels is the highlight attraction of this year's Hall of Fame. And for Sting to be positioned just a little below him, almost at number two, would make sense. Because here's the thing. If next year you turn around and want to put Sting in the Hall of Fame and you want to make him the big star for the class of 2012, a lot of people know who Sting is. They do. But he's never wrestled in WWE. How are you going to put somebody in the Hall of Fame as the lead attraction without any footage of him wrestling in a WWE ring? And they don't even have the TNA footage, so you're just going to put WCW highlights of him. And it's not like they haven't put people in the Hall of Fame that never wrestled for WWE. Or even if they wrestled, maybe it was one time or something, but they were not associated with WWE. I mean, they put Vern Gagne in the Hall of Fame. They put Antonio Inoki in the Hall of Fame last year. He wasn't exactly a top guy. There isn't exactly a whole lot of footage of him wrestling in WWE, maybe a little bit. I'm not saying they don't put people in the Hall of Fame that haven't necessarily worked for their company, but you'll never, and you have never seen anybody as the lead headline attraction who was never a WWE superstar. They're never going to do that. So for Sting to go in this year would make sense because HBK is getting top billing. Sting would get top billing too, I think, but, you know, make no mistake, he would be one level below Shawn Michaels, and I think that's the perfect place for him to be. So, again, all of this is speculation. Sting and WWE have no deal in place. They probably haven't even talked. The video was created. It was Vince McMahon who said, make a video because The Undertaker's coming back on this date. That was the plan. That was why the video was made. I would assume that next week, perhaps, you know, this week on Raw, we'll see a second video. Maybe they'll have a new one each week. Maybe this one will be a little more apparent who it is. If I'm WWE, I do one of two things here. Like I said, I make a deal for Sting. Sting has to cooperate, but I make a deal for him. I make a play for the guy, and I either keep it a secret and have Undertaker come out and have everybody thinking that Undertaker is the big surprise and then have Sting do that appearance at the end of the show. Or, quite frankly, maybe on the videos this upcoming week, I flat out say at the end of the video, Undertaker's coming back on the 21st and put this shit to bed and then have Sting make a surprise appearance on that show. Again, in a perfect world, that's how I would book it. Everybody has their own ideas. But the fact is, as of right now, that is a spot reserved for The Undertaker. And his proposed match with Wade Barrett is still one of the scheduled main events at WrestleMania this year. And before all of this video hoopla came about, on this very podcast, I said that the idea of an Undertaker-Wade Barrett match absolutely does nothing for me at WrestleMania. You want to have an Undertaker-Wade Barrett match at another pay-per-view? Fine. But as a WrestleMania match, as much as they've built up this streak, as few matches left at WrestleMania as The Undertaker has left, Wade Barrett and The Undertaker does nothing for me. And nobody in the world could possibly believe that Wade Barrett would have a shot at beating The Undertaker. It just is not a marquee match at WrestleMania. And all the respect in the world I have for Wade Barrett is he's turned into a fine performer, a great promo guy, but it does not scream special to me. And I'll tell you what, if The Undertaker is not healthy enough to do a singles match, I still make a play for Sting, and I bring in Sting to do a tag match with The Undertaker. Let Sting and The Undertaker team up. Let The Undertaker come back on February 21st and have his ass handed to him by the Nexus or by the Core on SmackDown or whatever. And let Sting be the guy to come to his rescue. Let the two big baby faces be tag team partners. Because as much as Sting and Undertaker is a dream match for a lot of people, it would be kind of a dream scenario to see the two of them team up as partners as well. Let Sting and The Undertaker team up against Kane and the Core or something to that effect. You can still do something with the guy. And I just think, you know, they've made plays for him so many times in the past, and it never worked out, and now he's a free agent. And time is of the essence here. You know, this guy is not getting any younger. He's over 50 years old, and clearly does not really have all that much of an interest in wrestling anymore. And you have this scenario now that has just fallen in your lap, where if The Undertaker can be healthy enough to do the match, all you have to do is say to Sting, one match. That's it. Just one match, the biggest possible stage you can have that match on, and they don't have anything else. So This is as good as it's going to get. If you want to check out the editorial I did on SE Scoops, I did an editorial about this whole 221.11 business with a top 10 listing of the 10 most likely or perhaps unlikely scenarios as to who this video can be about. Obviously, Undertaker is at the top of that list. Sting is number 2. And there's a couple of other interesting options on the list, including Triple H, Chris Jericho, Skip Sheffield, the former Tyler Black of Ring of Honor, now known as Seth Rollins, and a couple of other interesting choices. So if you haven't checked out that editorial, it's on the main page. Scroll down a little bit. Look for the 221.11 graphic. Click on it. Leave some comments underneath and let me know what you think. A couple of other quick notes here before we get to your feedback. I did see where it looks like Abdullah the Butcher, maybe one of the WWE Hall of Fame inductees that get announced within the next couple of weeks. I first heard about this when Triple H did a radio interview a while back and said that he made the pitch to Vince and everybody to put Abby in the Hall of Fame. Abdullah the Butcher, of course, he actually, I think, lives in Atlanta. I think he has a Chinese, I think it's a Chinese food and ribs restaurant that actually operates out of Atlanta. And he's a legend in the business. I don't know that he ever wrestled for WWE, certainly not on TV. So again, here's somebody that never really wrestled for the company, but it's not as though they haven't put people in the Hall of Fame before that have not wrestled for them. And he's a big enough name, although not very PG. But I think he's a deserving name to go into the Hall of Fame. And I mean, nothing's been confirmed, but it looks like he may be a lock for the Hall of Fame this year. I guess we'll find out soon. Tough Enough, of course, Stone Cold Steve Austin hosting the show. Apparently Booker T, who now, as I said earlier, is likely not going to be doing too much wrestling. He's the new color guy on SmackDown, literally and figuratively, a color guy. And he apparently will be one of the trainers on Tough Enough this season. So there you go. And Mystico apparently has signed a contract with World Wrestling Entertainment. Now, for those of you who don't know who Mystico is, he is one of the biggest stars in Mexico in the last at least 5 years. He wrestled for the CMLL organization and was part of one of the big boom periods, quite frankly, in Mexico over the last several years. He'd been very unhappy of late. Other people have started getting bigger pushes than him. He's known to be a prima donna, which, again, makes me wonder how he's going to fit into the WWE world. For people who were sending me messages saying, oh, Salamasi, you left Mystico out of your list as people. Maybe the videos are about him. They're not. They're not about him. First of all, Mystico is first going to be reporting to Florida Championship Wrestling so they can deprogram him. Because, of course, he doesn't know how to work. Certainly not the WWE style. So he's going to Florida first, and he doesn't know any English. And WWE is not putting somebody on TV that does not know how to speak at least a little bit of English. So he has promised them that he will learn English, and before he can make a debut on television, there's a lot of things that have to happen first. They are not going to put him on TV right away. So for people thinking that he's going to be at WrestleMania, for example, no, it's not going to happen. And in fact, when he goes down to Florida Championship Wrestling, it wouldn't shock me at all if he ended up quitting. Just because all the stories I've heard about this guy, it's going to be a big, big culture shock for him. And I'm not talking about a language barrier. I'm talking about the way that you get treated in developmental. If you were a big star previously somewhere else, I mean, even Alberto Del Rio, you know, the stories about him in Florida Championship Wrestling, and he also had a big ego and rubbed people the wrong way initially and had a chip on his shoulder. And he was a big star in Mexico. Comes from his family. Comes from a wrestling family. His father was Dos Caras, his uncle, the legendary Mil Máscaras. He came to Florida Championship Wrestling, and, you know, when you go down there, everybody is treated as equals. And, you know, you're wrestling in front of crowds that just pale in comparison to crowds, for example, that Mystico wrestled in front of in Mexico, 10, 12, 15,000 people. And now you're wrestling in front of 200 in a little studio in Florida. You know, he's going to have to change his name. They may want to take the mask off him as well, just like they did with Del Rio. Del Rio came very close to quitting before, you know, he was finally convinced to just kind of hang in there. And we see where he is now. And I think that was part of the reason why Mystico signed with WWE now, They had given him a look back in 2007. They actually brought him in. He wrestled not even a dark match. It was before the people were even brought into the arena. He was in the ring going through a match with like a mock match with somebody. And there were people. I mean, Rey Mysterio himself was a big advocate for Místico. Mysterio, of course, is the guy who may well be on his way out of WWE soon enough, and they see Místico perhaps as his replacement. But he, at the time anyway, he was in favor of bringing Místico in. He recommended him. Even JBL, at the time, saw Místico work that day when he was brought in, and he was blown away by the guy. But he made the decision not to sign, which was probably for the better, because he still was able to go back to Mexico and get a lot of good years. And again, I don't think WWE would have, you know, his chances of success now are better than they were then, just because, again, Mysterio may be on his way out. They're looking for new blood. At the time, I don't know that he would have gotten a fair shake. But, you know, apparently he's seen the success that Alberto Del Rio has had. And I've heard that Del Rio, for whatever reason, does not like Místico, which a lot of people would say the same thing. But I don't know if there's any specific bad blood between the two of them, but that's just something perhaps to keep in mind. But he has signed a contract with WWE. CMLL denied it. They said that he did not, in fact, sign a contract, and he is still working for them. But everything else I've heard says that he has left, and he is coming to the United States, and we'll see. We'll see what happens. Like I said, he's going to have to get a new name. They may want to take the mask off him. I think the mask is part of his whole persona. I think if Mysterio is going to be on his way out soon enough, you want to have another masked superstar. I think there's something marketable about that. In Del Rio's case, he lost the mask, and it worked out for him a hell of a lot better. With Místico, I don't know that you can say the same thing. But again, for people thinking that, oh, this is so fantastic, he's going to be coming to TV soon. If he ever makes it to TV, it's probably many months away from that happening. All right, so let's bring into the mailbag here. I have such a ridiculous backlog of letters. If I didn't get to your questions from the Facebook mailbag that will not die, I apologize, but I've just got to move on to these email questions here. So Chris from Iowa wanted to know, if Steve Austin did not want to work with Hulk Hogan, as I've mentioned before, then why did Austin mention maybe having a match with Hogan at the 2009 Hall of Fame? That was just a way for Austin to just get a dig in on Hogan, and I don't think it was the 2009 Hall of Fame. I believe it was the 2006 Hall of Fame, which is when Austin inducted Bret Hart. And the reason is he just wanted to kind of get a receipt on Hulk Hogan, because if you recall, Hulk Hogan came out on the Raw Homecoming show back in October of 2005. That was the first show when Raw returned to the USA Network. And they were running low on time, which is why it was such a quick thing and they ended the promo. But Mean Gene Okerlund was in the ring, and he brought out Hulk Hogan. And really the only thing Hogan was brought out to say was, he asked the fans, would you want to see a match between Hulk Hogan and Stone Cold Steve Austin? And the crowd erupted, and Hogan's music hit, and they went to commercial. And that was the last we ever heard of it. It was never brought up again. Austin, who was on the show that night and had done a segment earlier on, I think, where he gave stunners to all of the McMahons, including Linda, which looked horrible, I think he had already left the building. He wasn't very happy when he heard about this. Nobody cleared it with him. He didn't know it was going to happen, apparently. He never agreed to have a match with Hulk Hogan. So a couple months later, he's at the Hall of Fame, if I have my timeline correctly, and he made that crack about, with Hogan sitting behind him on stage, no less, and Austin comes out and says, you know, I was in the bag going through my bag, and I came across a can of whoop-ass, and it had Hulk Hogan's name on it. And, of course, the people went nuts. Hogan did not seem very happy with that remark. Austin was having a fucking blast. He was laughing. That's all it was. Austin, I mean, the only time I've ever heard Austin perhaps sound interested in having a match with Hogan, he did some random interview last year and made a comment to the reporter about, you know, Hulk Hogan versus Steve Austin would have been a great dream match. You know, I'm sorry that match never had an opportunity to take place. And I think he realizes it would have been a big match, but still, he just never had an interest in working with Hogan, because to him, at this stage of the game, what kind of match can you possibly get out of Hulk Hogan? I mean, at this point, none, because Hogan's back is completely fucked. But he did not want to go out there after not having wrestled since 2003. and have his big comeback match, no matter how big it might have been, and stink up the joint with Hulk Hogan. Plus, I just don't think he trusts Hogan. You know, again, Hogan has 100% creative control over his matches. And we all know in the backstage political war that erupted at the time with Shawn Michaels and Hulk Hogan back in 05, Hogan won. Hogan won, and Shawn Michaels was not very happy about that. And he acted a little bit unprofessional on Raw the night after SummerSlam. And I don't think Steve Austin wanted any part of that. He still has, or had at the time, some ill repute for Hulk Hogan going back to his WCW days when he was stunning Steve Austin trying to get a big break and kind of break through into the main event. He wanted to work a program with Hulk Hogan when Hogan came into WCW, and Hogan didn't want to work with Austin at all. I don't even think he knew who Austin was. And instead what happened is Hogan brought all of his buddies in. You know, the Nasty Boys came in, Hacksaw Jim Duggan came in, and in fact, Hacksaw Jim Duggan was booked to beat Steve Austin in like 30 seconds for the WCW US title. So Austin does not hold Hogan in terribly high regard. And Chris's second question here, back in 2006 or 2007, when DX dumped shit on the McMahons and the Spirit Squad, was that really shit? Because I read the DX book and they mentioned most of it was from the Big Show. No, it was really, come on. Don't believe too much of what you may have read in that DX book. Bob Bamber, one of our listeners from England, writes in, "Dear Solo Monster, I know right now it's unlikely, but do you think it's possible WWE could split their brands in terms of their TV rating, leave SmackDown PG and ship the kid fan favorites over to SmackDown like Rey Mysterio and John Cena, and then have Raw as the PG-14 show, leaving some more of the heavy characters in Edge, Undertaker, and Orton on that brand? Might be difficult in the sense of pay-per-views, and I guess there could be other complications, but do you think that this could be a balance they one day try to strike?" No. They haven't done it yet. They're not going to do it at all. And in fact, I remember talking about this on the Sound Off right around the time, well, ECW was still around. I started this podcast in late 07, and the ECW brand started in the summer of 06. But maybe it was towards the end, towards the demise of the ECW brand. But I've answered questions before where I thought it would have been smart for them to market the ECW brand as the edgier TV-14 brand and keep Raw and even SmackDown as TV-PG. Keep the two things separate. They're both running under the WWE umbrella. But ECW, it would kind of make it feel even more like its own standalone brand. And ECW inherently cannot be PG. And of course, we all know how that turned out when they tried to make it PG. It's not on the air anymore. Big surprise. So I've suggested that before. I think they should have done it with ECW. They didn't, because they're not going to. Because to them, everything they book and everything they market is the same. It's all WWE. And again, keep in mind, you got Linda McMahon who ran for Senate. She lost. She's going to run for Senate again. I'm almost sure of it. They're not going to market a product that is, you know, going to be just resemble anything that looked like the old Attitude Era. It's just not going to happen. If ever we get back to that point, it's WWE in general that's going to go back to being TV-14. They're not going to slice it up into different brands. I love the idea, and I've talked about it before, but it's just not going to happen. Sky writes into the podcast. He recently watched the 1992 Royal Rumble. Good choice, my friend. Enjoyed it. His question is, why was Ric Flair built up so strongly during the Rumble? He battled everyone and was always trying to stay active. And then, come WrestleMania 8, he's essentially jobbed out and given a match with Randy Savage instead of the match that everybody wanted to see, Flair versus Hogan for the belt. That was a question I used to ask myself all the time when I was younger. And apparently, the plan all along was to do Savage and Flair and Hogan versus Sid. It wasn't something that suddenly changed unexpectedly in mid-February when they did the swap. Because again, remember, Flair won the Rumble and the championship. And they did a press conference a couple weeks later where Hulk Hogan was named number one contender over Savage and Sid and Undertaker and Piper and all those guys. And it was being built up as a Hulk Hogan-Ric Flair match. And all of a sudden, they did the storyline where Sid turned on Hogan, turned heel, and President Jack Tunney made the decision that it was going to be Hogan versus Sid at WrestleMania, and instead Savage would get the title shot. And apparently that was the plan from the very beginning, was to build to Hogan versus Sid and do Savage Flair instead. The angle went exactly as they had planned for it to go. Would Hogan versus Flair have been the biggest marquee match? Absolutely. But I think what happened is they started having Flair versus Hogan matches on the house show circuit as early as October. And the first one or two did pretty well. And after that, Hogan versus Flair on the road really wasn't doing any business, which was kind of shocking at the time. And I think that played into the decision. They said, listen, you know, this is not a match that's going to do phenomenal business for us. And again, Hogan was on his way out. You know, again, after WrestleMania 8, he disappeared for a year. This was around the time, again, the stuff, the steroid stuff was really heating up. Hogan was just being hammered in the press. He just looked, his reputation took a huge hit around that 1991-1992 time period. I think they just, and he just wanted to get the hell off TV for a while and just kind of hide and take a break. And if that was the case, you weren't going to have Hogan beat Flair for the title. And maybe that was the biggest reason of all that it didn't happen. If you would have had Hogan versus Flair for the championship at WrestleMania, there could have been no other outcome than having Hogan win the title from Flair. But that would have necessitated Hogan staying. And if Hogan had already decided he wasn't staying, then you can't do the match. And all I know is that that was not a last-minute change. That was the plan all along. Got an email here from C.N. Tyler in Ireland. Dear Solomonster, I have this memory of WCW around 1995 or 96 when the NWO were in the ring, and I think Hogan was bad-mouthing Sting for weeks, and everyone was dying to see Sting come back and kick his ass. Finally, Sting returned, or so we thought. It was a fake Sting, and the NWO beat him up. Another fake Sting hit the ring, and then another, and another, and another, until the ring was full of fake Stings. The NWO cleaned house until Hogan punched the real Sting. It was one of my favorite memories of WCW, and I would like to watch it again. I've been looking for this on YouTube and cannot find it. Do you have any idea where I can find this? I love the podcast. Thanks a lot. Well, you, my friend, are in luck. I'm going to email you this as soon as I'm done with the show here. I have the clip on YouTube of what I think you're asking about. Your memory's a little fuzzy. It wasn't 95 or 96. It was 97. And because there was no NWO in 95. And it was not Hogan who punched the real Sting. It was actually Buff Bagwell, who was so over the top in this clip, you know, and so happy with himself after he hits Sting and he flexes his muscles to pose. And Sting, of course, gives him the slop drop, or I guess it would be the scorpion death drop. I still think of Henry Godwin when I think of that move. It was a great moment. The crowd went nuts. Again, Sting after Sting, fake Stings kept coming out from down the aisle, from out of the crowd. It was ridiculous. And then this one Sting that everybody, I guess, is supposed to assume is fake comes walking up the ring steps very slowly. He comes into the ring, and when he gets hit by Buff Bagwell, he just stands there. And then the crowd realized at that point. They went apeshit because they figured this has got to be the real thing. And of course it was, and Sting took his mask off to reveal his face paint, and in fact, it was the real Sting. It was great, and you know what? Like I said, I'm going to email you the link. But when I saw this clip, I, you know how YouTube on the right hand side will link to other clips, and I went and I watched some of the other clips from the year long Sting Hogan build up and all the appearances that Sting did. And I just talked about this earlier in the show. Sting never said a word. He would be in the rafters, or he would come down from the rafters, or come down the aisle. And you know, there was another episode where the NWO was in the ring, and Sting came down the aisle, walked up the stairs, went into the ring, had his baseball bat in his hand, and pointed at them with the baseball bat, and then he held his arm out outside the ring and dropped the ball bat. And then Randy Savage came running at him, and Sting beat him up, and all the other guys came after Sting, and he beat him up. And I've just never seen a crowd react the way that I saw them react in this clip. And it really made me go back and think that, you know, that may have been one of the all-time... It was one of the all-time great wrestling storylines. Was Sting against the NWO and Hogan. And I mean, and it goes back to when Sting was still wearing the colored face paint. And this was after the War Games pay-per-view in September of 96, and Sting came out on Nitro the next night, and people didn't believe him. I think the story at the time was people thought Sting was defecting to the NWO and maybe helping the enemy, and Sting tried to convince his best friend Lex Luger and everybody that it wasn't him. I think maybe that was when the first fake Sting was first making an appearance. And nobody would believe Sting. And Sting for years had been the franchise player of WCW. And here everybody has seemingly turned their back on Sting. And Sting, on that particular night, basically said, fuck you to everybody. And that was the last time we ever saw Sting with the blonde hair and the colored face paint. And that's when he turned into the Crow character. He never said a word. People realized that he was telling the truth. And Luger and everybody tried to apologize to him. And just this went on for just months and months. And he would make these appearances and the place would go apeshit for him. And, I mean, the payoff when he beat Hogan, it was a horrible match. And Hogan basically beat him clean with the big botch at the end. I mean, it was just terrible. But the build-up to this and the Sting character in 1997, I'm telling you, it was something else. All these years later to go back and watch that stuff gives me goosebumps. And I wasn't even the biggest WCW fan at the time. I mean, I was just like everybody else, flipping on Monday nights from one show to the other. But I can look back on that now and you know, give them a golf clap because it was just phenomenal stuff. And, you know, it gives me goosebumps even looking back on it. So, you're in luck. I'll email you the clip and hope you enjoy it. James writes in. He says he was watching the Royal Rumble, and Jerry Lawler on commentary mentioned to Michael Cole that one day he's going to get his. And it dawned on me that Jerry Lawler might actually get his WrestleMania match against Michael Cole. Well, I don't know if it's going to be against Michael Cole, but when I talked about Lawler earlier, I forgot to mention this one very important fact. And what also makes me happy about seeing Lawler in the position he's in is that this all but guarantees that he's going to finally get that elusive WrestleMania match. And I feel happy for the guy. I mean, he's talked about it enough in interviews and apparently in conversations with his good friend Jim Ross, where it clearly is something, it's something very real to him that bothers him. And he's come close on two separate occasions. He's talked to Vince McMahon and joked around with him about it. And Vince, I remember Lawler saying that he brought it up with Vince one year, and this was maybe 2 years ago, and Vince was like, you're kidding me. You've never had a WrestleMania match? He was like, Vince McMahon was like appalled by this, and Lawler thought he was finally going to get it, and he never did, and it looks like, I find it impossible to believe that after everything that's been going on, and Lawler is in the championship match of the pay-per-view before WrestleMania, that Lawler won't get a match on the big show. I don't know if it'll be against Michael Cole. It could be maybe a match with like an Alex Riley, and maybe Cole is the referee, or, you know, if he beats Alex Riley, maybe he gets like 5 minutes in the ring with Michael Cole, which is a similar stipulation they used at WrestleMania 12. I believe it was there was a 6-man tag match. It was Vader, Owen Hart, and the British Bulldog against Ahmed Johnson, Jake the Snake Roberts, and Yokozuna. Not a great match, but if I remember correctly, the stipulation was that if Yokozuna's team won, Yoko, who had split from Jim Cornette a few months earlier, would get him in the ring for 5 minutes. And, of course, the heels won, and it never happened. But I could see them doing something like that. As long as Lawler gets the match, whatever, whoever it may be against, it doesn't matter. As long as he gets the match, I think everybody will feel happy for the guy. Got a lot of emails, including this one from Mark, regarding the Essie Scoop sign at the Royal Rumble. He was watching the pay-per-view, and during the Miz Orton match, someone put up a sign saying, Essie Scoops. Any idea who that was or what that was about? The sign also went up at the beginning of the Rumble match. I think you could see it when Punk and Daniel Bryan were going at it, and apparently it was taken away midway through the Rumble, I guess, when somebody smartened up the people backstage what it meant. That was one of our good friends here, a listener of the podcast, and one of our Facebook friends, Jimmy White, who actually posted a picture of the sign earlier that day on my Facebook page before he went to the pay-per-view. At the time, and you can probably, if you go back on my Facebook page and scroll back and back and back and back and back, you'll probably find it. At the time, he had left the S off the end of the sign, so I assume he added the S on because the sign did say SE Scoops at the pay-per-view. But yeah, it was our avid sound-off listener, Jimmy White, who got the sign on the air. Thumbs up to Jimmy. Kong writes into the podcast, not Kong, it's K-O-N, no G. Been a listener since episode 100. I wanted to know if you knew what ethnicity Taz is. Well, that's a bizarre question. I don't know. I was going to say, he's from the Brooklyn ethnicity. I don't know. I really have never stopped to think about it. I suppose if maybe somebody else out there who's a Taz fan knows or cares to look it up, and they can let us know, and I'll let you know. But I've never really given it a second thought, so I can't answer that question. Ash from Australia writes in, is it possible to get a quick shout-out on your podcast this weekend? It's my 18th birthday, and I'll be listening to your podcast while I can remember what I am doing. Well, if you don't remember what you're doing, that's a sign of a good birthday. Anyway, he's been a listener since episode 50, a big, long-time fan of the podcast. So, happy birthday, Ash. Your 18th birthday. It's like your first big landmark birthday. Then comes 21, and it's pretty much all downhill after that. So, enjoy it while you can, buddy. But definitely have a good time, and he's one of the good guys. So, happy birthday, Ash. And the last question here, and again, there's a ton more. I'll get to them at some point, I promise. But I had to mention this. This was an email I got from David in Silver Spring, Maryland, one of our loyal listeners. And he wrote in a question here regarding TNA's They storyline. And, of course, you know, he wanted to know, at first, They was supposed to be the main event mafia until Nash and Booker T bailed. Now they're Fortune, blah, blah, blah. You know, what do you think about all this? But the thing is, the reason I bring this up, even though I've already answered this, I do think that, you know, Fortune turning babyface and the young guys getting a shot is a good thing, to answer your question. In the subject line of his email, he put Plan B with a question mark. And the first thought that popped into my brain when I saw this email, I thought poor David was writing into me in a frenzy, asking me where he can get Plan B. And I was about to write back to him and go, thumbs up, dude. And then I realized what he meant by that. And he, in fact, was not talking about any sort of pregnancy, which is a shame. I'm sure, you know, it'll happen, David. But I don't know. I started cracking up laughing. Maybe it was just funny to me. And besides, if you really needed Plan B, you shouldn't be writing into me. I think that would be the last thing that you should probably be doing. I would get to a pharmacy, but happy to hear that that is, in fact, not what you were asking about. So on that chipper note, we're going to cinch up this mailbag here, where, in fact, we do not answer pharmacological questions here for our listeners. You need to call your local pharmacy for that. The Solomonster at gmail.com. If you have wrestling questions, though, I'd be more than happy to get them and answer them for you. TheSolomonster at gmail.com. Friend me on Facebook, facebook.com/TheSolomonster. Don't forget the secret files. They're on there. You have to be a friend, though. And twitter.com/Solomonster to follow me on there. I posted a link to a mock-up that somebody did in Photoshop of, and I don't know who did it. I didn't do it. But it was a mock-up of just a fantastic poster. And there's been a whole bunch of different versions going around of mocked up posters for WrestleMania hyping a Sting Undertaker match. There was one, for example, that borrowed from the old Dark Knight poster with the Joker, and you only see part of his face, and he's got his gloved hand up in front of his face, and he's holding a card, like a Joker card. So somebody did a mock-up of Sting with the white face paint and all, holding up a card that had the Undertaker's picture on it and said Streak, which is like the greatest fucking thing I've seen ever, I think. But then somebody one-upped that person and did a poster where, instead of it being the wrestling version of Sting, it was actually the singer. It looks phenomenal. And apparently there's another version floating around where it's the Stinger, not the Stinger, the Singer. My God. But the Singer is wearing the Stinger's face paint. I'm all confused now. Now I've confused myself. If anybody has a link to that version, send it to me. I'd love to see the Singer with the Sting face paint on holding up the card. I think that's just phenomenal. But anyway, if you want to see a link to that Photoshop, it's really well done, and probably better than any pay-per-view poster I've seen any wrestling promotion do in maybe ever. Go to my Twitter. It's on there, and click to follow me. So that's going to do it for episode 145 this week. I want to thank everybody for listening, as always. Perhaps I'll have my new iPhone in my possession by the time we hit the air with episode 146 next weekend. Yeah, that's exciting. Be well, stay safe, we'll see you right back here next week.
Let me tell you something, Sarah.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solomonster Sound.
Hands Off on scoops.com.